Now, on to module 4, advanced functions. So before our, we're calling it a meal break, right? We're going to get started meal with advanced break. Functions before our meal break. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the purpose to advanced functions. In other words, I'm going to ask Jeffrey questions about it. Show you an advanced function template and the parts of an advanced function. It's not much harder than what we've been working with. We'll show you how to create and test parameters, some more parameters, and then where your code should go. And then something really cool, getting stuff out to the pipeline. In other words, we're going to start turning this into a pretty doggone cool tool. So first of all, the purpose to advanced functions. Now, we've already talked about this a little bit, but this is me being able to make something that looks like commandlets.
Yes.
And that's important for me to make my own little toolboxes and to make, as we're going to bundle them into modules later on. Mm-hmm. So when you originally wrote the manifesto, and I got to get me one of those. I got to get me a manifesto. Was this already kind of in your mind at the time that me as an admin, I'm going to be able to create these? They look and feel just like commandlets from the beginning?
Yeah, we were always super, super clear about this distinction between the experience and the implementation, okay? And you see that everywhere, right? Remember I showed you in the previous session, variables is a syntax, but in fact, you could store variables in the file system, right? Crazy stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so we knew that we were going to have commandlets, which was a high-level task-oriented experience for the user. But then how that got implemented, we knew that there were going to be lots of different ways to implement it, and that's what you've seen.
Right.
So in version 1, the only way you could implement it was in .NET. We had functions, but they weren't really commandlets. In PowerShell version 2, we made commandlets available through PowerShell, and this unleashed the power of the masses.
Oh, boy.
And then in version 3, you saw that you can implement it in .NET, PowerShell, or Windows Workflow. That's right, Windows Workflow technology can be commandlets, or you can do WMI, and so that's native code.
Well, and one of the cool things about this is if you take a look at my screen here, they're not the same as compiled commandlets, and here's what's not the same about them. I didn't have to learn C Sharp and use Visual Studio. That's what's not the same about them. In other words, if you wanted to make commandlets before, you had to be more of a dev. And there's nothing wrong with that, but you know, I'm an IT guy. I'm learning a lot as I'm going. So this makes it a lot easier. They're not the same, but they are just perfect for us as IT pros because we're making great looking commandlets, and we want to respect the best practices for that. I also want you to notice on my screen the get help, and I could actually run this, but there's a lot of help of everything that we're going to be doing today. And I'll just do get help for you guys on function. There's a lot of help files out here that walk you through everything that we're going to be talking about. So everything that we're going to be doing with the parameter validation. So everything we show you is written out for you. So keep that in mind when you're like, oh, what was this or what was that? It's all there in the help. Now to get started with this, we're going to show you a little bit different kind of template for this. Now, I've given you one that I started off really easily. And let me open up for module 4 here, CD module 4, and my startup script. I want you to take a look at this simple little template that I've made up. And Jeffrey, I'm confused by a few things. Okay. Here's function.
Yep.
Now, we're going to talk about comment-based help. I just have it there right now.
Yep.
Function, verb-noun. What I wanted to do was make a template that I could easily use to remind me of the things I needed to put in. Commandlet binding needs to be there, and parameter. And so I know that I'm going to want parameter, and I'm going to have some variables in here that I'm going to want to use. So I just put them into my template. But here's some other strange things that are in my template. The begin, process, and end. We've never seen this before.
Yes.
And why is this in my template? What is begin, process, and end?
One of the big distinctions between a function and a commandlet. Commandlet's a full commandlet, and it deals with the pipeline. So honestly, the best way to get this in focus is to just experiment. As always, the best way to get things in PowerShell in focus is to experiment. So let's party with that. So here, the way I do this is I'll just go and I'll I'll take this and I'll put in some code. I'll say begin, and then I'll say process.
Oh, this is awesome, yeah.
And I'll say end, okay? So then I'll just execute it and see what happens, okay? Okay, so then we say verb dash noun, begin process end.
Yeah, okay.
Okay,
so what's up with that? So what we've got is these code block sections, and apparently the begin ran once, process ran once, and end ran once.
Yeah.
Am I with you so far?
Pretty exciting.
Yeah, I know. Pretty exciting. go ahead.
Okay, so now let's experiment some more. So first, we got two parameters. That's too many, right? So let's simplify. Let's just do with one, my string, right? Just to be simple, okay? And now what I'm going to do is we're going to say $ my string. String. By the way, see why $T works?
Yeah, a lot less typing.
Okay, and let's provide that as a variable. Verb noun minus my string test. Okay, so it's available everywhere. So again, still no, not much of a distinction. But now let's do this. Let's say parameter. What is it? Value from
pipeline.
Am I doing this right? Equals $true. Okay. So now what that says is I'm going to say, you know, 1.3 pipe 2 verb dash noun. Okay. And what I said here was, we're going to get into this in detail.
Yes.
Okay. But what I said was I want to get the pipeline, this string from the pipeline. So that says I'm going to have values 1, 2, and 3. That then gets sent to verb.noun, and they're going to be assigned to this. So now let's see how that works.
Oops, wait a minute.
Okay, my addition. Multiple declares. Oh, sorry. I did this wrong. It's not parameter. Oh, that's. There we go.
That's what he didn't like.
Check this out.
Yeah.
So notice now begin. Does not, where's my string? It's not defined.
Right.
Right? Why? And the answer is because my string is now coming from the pipeline.
Coming from the pipeline.
But now notice here, I don't get one process, I get three processes.
Why do I get three of them here?
Because it gets called process, that script gets called once for every object in
Comes down that pipeline, right? So every object that comes down, the process code block is going to run once for each single object.
Exactly. So now check this out. Now let's not make this a string. Let's make this an integer. And let's just call it x. Okay. And here, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, now what the begin block? The begin block is about setting up code necessary to establish, to do your processing. So imagine you say, I'm going to want to total all the integers. So I'm going to say $total equals zero. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to set a set of integers here. And so I'm going to say $total plus equals $x.
Okay.
So for every object that comes through, and then when I'm done, what do I want to do? And the answer is here I say total equals $total. Okay? So again, I'm going to pipeline a set of things, right? Set of integers to this. This is going to run once, so I initialize a total. Then this is going to get called every single time where I take the value from the pipeline and I assign it here and then I run this code.
Awesome.
So I increment it. And then when I'm done, when I'm fully complete, I call this. Okay, so let's run it. And then 6.
Cool. Do that.
15. By the way, so this begin, process, end. Imagine that instead of totaling something, I was going to add a set of things to a SQL database. Okay, so mm-hmm. I got a bunch of objects and I'm going to add them to a SQL database. In the begin, that's where you create your connection to the SQL database. Then the process, you add row, add row, add row, add row, add row, and end is where you close,
clean up. So this is actually kind of structuring our code a little bit for us. The begin, as you said, is where we could do connections to SQL. We could be calling up other .NET objects, instantiating those that we want to use, then process.
Right.
And then we close everything down with the end.
It's like, do you hobbies?
Hobbies?
Yeah, like, you know what? Well, like, imagine you were going to... Oh, well, there you go. If you were like a tool maker, right, do something with there. What you do, you're going to do a project. What you first do is you set up your tool bench. Okay, I got my saw, my, you know, you get all your tools there. Then you do the work. Then you clean up. Well, that's what begin, process, end is. Begin. Set up your toolbox. Get everything ready. Okay. Then do your work, do your work, do your work, do your work. And when you're done, you clean things up.
Perfect. So let me give you a real life example of why this is so important, especially about the process block. And you've seen this before. I'm going to do get service, and what I want to do is pipe to a something else, select object, which is a commandlet. Now think about this. Multiple services are going to go across that pipeline, and I just want to see the property name. Now this is going to create a long list of names, but what it's doing for me is select object is supporting in the process. It's processing it for me. So the process block gets run once for everything that gets piped to it, or if nothing gets piped to it, it still runs just once. So when we start putting in our code, this is where we're going to start putting in our code. Now, I want to show you something else. I like to start off with this simplified, very simple kind of template. I like to have my own simple template. This makes it really easy that when you create a one line or something that you like that is solving a problem for you, you can quickly, as you'll see me do, just throw it in here and move on. And you're making tools really fast. I do want to show you that the ISE has built in these snippets, and it's Control J. And they're right here. Commandlet, advanced function, and complete. Now, look at the simplified one. It's better than mine. It's got the begin, process, and end blocks in it. It's got some parameters, and look at what they've done. We're going to talk more about all these different types you can have in here, but here's value from pipeline, and this is by something else that we'll talk about, by property name. And so this template is all set up for you to use. So you might want to create your own. You might want to start with this one, but make sure that you have these code blocks in here, begin, process, and end in the template, because we're going to need that. Also, dun 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 dun, in Control J, by the end of the day, you're gonna really like this complete one. The complete one has everything. And I know some of this stuff doesn't make sense right now. It will all make sense by the end of the day, but look at all these different parameter validations that you're gonna see us use and stuff like that. So this complete one may be the one that at the end of the day you wanna start. So here's your mission. When we get to our meal break here, which we're coming up on, your mission is to either create your own simple template or you start to get familiar with one of the built-in templates into the ISE. Try to think through.
It's a snippet.
Snippet. I keep calling it template. Yes, it's a snippet.
Yeah, snippet. Have some more coffee.
I keep calling it a template. It's a snippet. Jeez, it even says snippet.
Yeah. Because when you go to, you want to think, words matter.
Words do matter.
That's the whole point. You want to think, type, get. And so if you think template, you're going to look for template and you're not going to find it. So think snippet. It's a snippet. And then when you say, oh, is there any, give me some help about snippets, you're going to see import, export, get, or new snippet.
Absolutely. So go through a snippet, take a look at it, and pick which one you want to use for today. And make sure you understand what we're doing in here. Even go ahead and start to try out maybe some of your own code in your own parameterized script during the meal break, because we're going to take our parameterized script that we've added a function to, and now we're going to start to add the begin, process, end blocks and more parameter validation. In other words, we're going to start to step up what our tool can actually be. So make sure that you kind of understand the components that we've covered so far So when we get back, it's going to start getting...
Step your tool game up for all you iced tea references.
Step your tool game. Is that an iced tea reference?
Oh, yeah.
What's the...
Step your tool game up.
Oh, step your tool game up.
Anyway, but there's two things I want to point out here. Great question in the chat room. Somebody asked, hey, that process block, is that parallel? Does that run concurrently?
Yeah.
The answer is no. And here's the reason why. In .NET, unlike Java, in Java, things are thread safe. Okay. In .NET, the objects themselves are not thread safe, and therefore you, as the caller, have to handle all the concurrency control. By the way, if none of this makes any sense to you, don't bother. It doesn't matter. So you have to handle concurrency control. So in the programmer does. So in this case, you are the programmer. So you would have to know when and how to handle the concurrency control, where to do the locking, et cetera. Now, that's just not at all appropriate. Look, systems programmers, the guys I hire, they have a hard time getting this right. No way I was going to give that to the IT admins of the world, and
we
they were
never
going to get that right.
Yeah.
So the answer is no, it isn't. It is not parallel. Now, this then brings up an interesting conversation around... Jason showed you, you could do invoke command minus computer, blah, or you could say for each $C in computer. Let me just show you that to draw the distinction. Let's see, do I have this up here? Okay, so there's two things you can do. You could do invoke command minus computer, get content. servers.txt and do some function like that, or you could do for each $s in get content servers.txt
using those parentheses and grabbing the text file
and do something with it there. Okay, so either way will work. But there is a huge difference, and the first one is far more preferable. By the way, so this would be invoke computer name, invoke command minus computer name, $s.
Yes.
Okay. Huge difference between these two. This says, okay, I get this content, and then I grab the first one, and I run this. When it's done, I get the second one, and I run this. It is serial, okay? And by the way, so I was telling you about the guy I met this weekend.
Yeah,
there's a funny story about a guy I met this weekend who was talking about this very thing. Here's what's gonna happen. Imagine one of these computers is down, okay? Then what's gonna happen is you're gonna get it, you're gonna do this, and it's gonna wait. It's gonna try, and it's gonna try, and it's try, and it's gonna wait before it eventually fails. And then it's going to go to the next one. So one way or the other, even if you didn't have a failure, it's serial and it takes a long time. And if you've got a failure in there, it's going to take a really long time. Here, when you do invoke command, now here's the deal, we handle the concurrency control. Okay? So when you say minus computer name and you get this big list, what we do is we produce three lists, the to-do list, the in-progress list, and the done list. Now, say you had 1,000 servers. We go and we put those 1,000 servers in the to-do list, and then we have this in-progress list, right? And there we have, I think it's either 32 or 64, you get to control it if you don't like our number, outstanding entries, right? So what we do is we grab the first 32, we issue the request concurrently to all 32 of them, and they're waiting. Now, when one finishes, we take it out of that list and we put it in the done, and we grab the next one. So this acts as a sliding buffer where we have that many outstanding requests operating in parallel. Exactly. And if you wanted to, you could do minus throttle limit equals 1,000 and do them all at once. But this is where you get parallelism, super powerful. We handle it for you. It's safe. And if one of those machines, like, again, I got 32 of them, if one of them stalled and it's going to take a really long time before it comes back and says, I tried, but it just wouldn't work, doesn't matter. I got 31 other things that are just going to town, crankety crank. So really, this technique is far preferable.
Yes, and this is the power of PowerShell remoting. So you've got to make sure you have remoting enabled, as we talked about in the last episode, because that is incredibly powerful. It's time that we start to add in some parameters, test some parameters, add in our own code into the processing block, and see if we can start spitting out objects. So
let's go.
Here we go. Boys and girls, just to, if you take a look at the slides, we just got done with the advanced function template. And what we're going to do now is move on to creating and testing your own parameters. And so I have a couple of examples that I'd like to work with, and we'll dive right in here. First of all, take a look, and this is my example.
And we are still on module 4, scripts in module 4.
Yeah, scripts in module 4. Yes, thank you. Module 4.
4.
So take a look at my test parameter start. I've got a couple of parameters. We've already talked about this, but I want you to notice that I've got a couple of additional things. First of all, param block. Got a computer name string. Notice the brackets for string. I've got something called a switch. I'm going to show you how this works. There's a lot of times that parameters are just switches. They're either on or off, and this is one of them. As you can tell, shortly, we're going to be looking at making error logs. So I also have a parameter for an error log, and I've got a default value in for the error log. What I'd like to do is show you some code to test your parameters to make sure they're working, but let me show you what these look like first. I'm going to run this so that it's and now it's get conf info. So I'm going to do get help and get conf info. Now, what you're going to notice is that the help system is already trying to build or help me build a very nice help file. What I'd like you to focus on right now is the syntax, and take a look at computer name and see how it's string right there, string. Now, I don't know if you joined us for the first one, but this is where when we were talking about reading syntax, there's a special indicator that lets you know whether you can have multiple objects or not. Well, in this script that I'm working on, I don't want to take just one computer name. I want multiple computer names. Now, if you join us for the first one, you see dash computer name, then inside of the Chihuahuas. That's where your arguments go, and you can see that it says string because I defined it as string, but what's missing is there's an internal set of brackets. I call them binkies. That means we can take multiple objects. So the first thing I want to do is take a look at the modification I'm going to do on my script. I'm going to go up here, and I'm going to put those bink, bink in there. Now, when I run this and take a look at the syntax again, get help. Of course, I could just hit the up arrow key. And we take a look at the syntax, you can see now it's properly showing that it can take multiple objects. But danger, Will Robinson, and we mentioned this in the last one, is that, yeah, that means it can take multiple things now, but we now have to handle that in our script. So I want to show you a couple of things. I want to show a cool way to test for switches and a cool way to handle it, whether you're getting the multiple objects and it seems to be working correctly. And Jeffrey, you can help me out with this because this is one of these weird things. Take a look at a test parameter end, PS1. Guys, this is the same thing. Let me go up here and put my, look what I'm doing here in the begin block. And I put it in here just so you can see a good example of putting something in begin. Mm. And I want you to take a look at the if statement. See this switch up here, switch error log, if error log. This means, is it on or is it not on? So you can see if error log has been selected, then write verbose, error logging is turned on, else write verbose, error logging turned off. In order to use write verbose, which I think is the greatest documentation thing in the world.
Yeah.
So in a lot of older scripting that I used to do, you would write things out and then you would have to go back and comment everything out or remove stuff. But write verbose is fantastic because we can turn that feature itself on or off, right?
Yep.
And so here's the tricky part about testing this, is that I want to test this if statement to see if error log switch is turned on or not, but I'm using write verbose, which means I also have to make sure I use dash verbose when I try this, or I'm not going to see a result. So let me do that one first, and then we'll come back to computer name. So let me run this and show you how this looks. So this if statement now will let me test it. So get comp info. And what I'm testing right now is computer name isn't mandatory, but I'm going to put something in just so that it can run. And I want to show you, I want to see if error log as a switch parameter is turned on, so I'm going to say verbose so that write verbose.
Show them without.
Oh, yeah, show them without. That's a good idea.
So here's the deal. What happens without doing that? It just...
And as a matter of fact, I have to tell you guys that when I was putting this simple example together, I sat there and ran it like three times and went, why isn't it working? And then I had to remember. I was the slow one. Not the sharpest knife in the drawer. But actually, this happens a lot. You have to remember that, you know, write verbose, you need to use dash verbose. Now watch what happens. Now, I'm going to do it without the dash error log. And I'll leave verbose on. And now you can see it tested that it's that switch parameter is not turned on. This is a great way to test for it, but not only that, I can use this code later on, which is what I'm going to do, when we do set up and use an error log. So it's a nice way to test the switch parameter and its actual usable code for later. Now the tricky part is this for each that we're going to have to do. If I want to take multiple computer names, I'm going to get multiple computer names in $ computer name.
Yep.
I'm going to have to iterate through that. If I want to do a couple of WMI commands,
yes.
I'm going to have to iterate through that, and that's
yes
or
no.
Yes or no.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So here's the thing. Remember, some of the commandlets take computer name as a collection, and
right.
they'll do the fan out.
And they'll do it for me, right.
Yeah, and other times you iterate through.
And see, this is
so
the part.
So you have some choices. Some people say, oh, well, in PowerShell, there's multiple ways to do things. And the answer is, yeah, it's good.
Which is good. But take a look at my screen. This is what we're talking about, is if I do get service, and I'll just do name bits, when I do dash computer name, see, he's going to take multiple computer names. And he's going to figure it all out. Well, now that we're the ones writing the tool, we have to write that intelligence in. And let me show you an example, because I'm going to use this code over and over and over again. So take a look here. For each, we can use Jeffrey's suggestion for this, which is actually pretty cool. I called it $computer in that collection of computer names. So if I get multiple computers in there, I need to iterate through each one of them. And in this test for write verbose, I'm just saying, just print that individual computer out. Now, if you like that style of making this shorter,
By the way, the other reason why you do that
yeah.
is because the previous example, you actually weren't following a best practice.
Uh-oh.
Because in PowerShell, it's best practice to not have any plurals. Everything's singular. So you'll notice it says computer name, not computer names.
Right.
And the reason for that is for everybody else in the world, right? Which is to say, English is particularly irregular when it comes to pluralization. Process, processes, two ES. Service, services with one S. Child, children. And so, you know, when do you mean one? When do you mean multiple? And so we said, hey, in PowerShell, it's always a singular name. And then you can give it a single thing or multiple things. Now, I will be quick to add, yeah, somebody can do the gotcha somewhere, someplace, somebody used a plural. And so, you know, we're not perfect, but that's the rule and the best practice.
So
that's why if you had, you know, computers, you know, computers doesn't work.
So yeah. Let's use Jeffrey's example here and let's shorten this because I like the readability of it. So $C in computer name, and computer name can hold one or more. So let's try this for each and see if it will, with verbose, print them out. So
you'll need to fix your verbose to $C.
Ah, thank you. And let's run this. So let's do this. Oh, I do that all the time. Stop doing that. Well, now I really screwed it up.
Control Z
is my friend. Here we go. So clear the screen and get comp info and computer name. And let's just do one. It's verbose. And so computer DC shows up here at the last line. So it got one of them. Yay! Now let's do it for multiple ones. Up arrow. There we go. So I'm going to do DC client. If I can spell it correct, S1 and S2.
That's verbose.
And I forgot the verbose. Do you believe that? Yep. Verbose. And now I'm iterating through each and every one of them. reason that this is important is this is a very common thing that you're going to need, because you're all, most of the time, your commandlets, you're going to want to be able to hit multiple computers with, yeah. and you're going to want to be able to iterate through this. So this is almost like boilerplate code that you're going to see us use in the process block here in a yep. second. So that's pretty cool, right?
Love yeah. it. Love
Does that work?
Love
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. So here's the thing. I've got some testing in here. I'm going to kind of collapse this so we don't have to keep staring at it. The nice part about using something like Write Verbose is now if I don't use dash verbose, I don't see all that stuff, but I can see it when I want to see it to make sure that things are working correctly. I just love that. Now we want to start to add our code. Where should we be putting our code? Let's say I want to do just, I just want to get a WMI thing, maybe like Logical Disk or something like that.
Yep.
I can put it in begin, and that's going to just run once.
Yep, as long as you're not getting the output from, or getting it, you're not operating anything that you're going to pipeline to it.
And that's the issue.
Yes.
So we really want to put it in the process
block. Yep.
Even if we don't intend to use pipeline input, we might change that though, right?
Exactly.
So we want to put it in the process block. So tell you what, guys, take a look. Main code 4, and I'm going to minimize this.
And we're on to 4, okay.
This is the same thing that we just saw, only this time, take a look. In the process block, I've put that for each computer in computer name. And, you know, I like, Jeffrey, what you've done so much with just making it a single, how pretty that looks, that let's just do that so it becomes really clear.
See, and then you get more on the screen.
And I get more on the screen. Awesome!
But you do need the C there.
Oh, but I do. I do actually need the C there. So for each individual computer name that's in this collection of computer names, what do you want to do? And in this case, guys, right now, I just got a couple of WMI commands that are going for my main code. I don't even have to have them set to variables right now. As a matter of fact, let me just take the variables out for a second, just so you can see this run. What's going to happen is that for each one of these, I'm going to get the computer name, and I'm going to run that WMI command for that computer, and I'm doing Win32 operating system and Win32 logical disk. This will just get me some computer information, like if I wanted to retrieve some inventory information. I'm just getting some basics. And so right now, if I run this and clear the screen, and we'll do get comp info, and let's just use one computer at the moment, you'll see that it runs through, it gives me some of that basic information from WMI, and I can also now, let's do it for multiple computers, DC, client. Now this is becoming kind of a cool tool in the sense that I've got something that looks like a commandlet, and I've got, I'm getting a couple of bits of information. I could actually add some more WMI, do a complete inventory of as many computers as I want. But you know what I don't like is it's just kind of displaying stuff out here. This really isn't. I don't want all of this, first of all.
Okay.
And second of all, you know, I have to take a look, but these are objects coming out, but I'm not in control of anything. So I'd like to clean this up a little bit.
What would you like to do?
I would like to only
talk to you.
I would like to only see certain properties. So maybe a hash table,
or a new object.
I'm thinking that we should probably do both. Let's do a hash table,
and then
do a new object. So this is
hash tables are a critical component of PowerShell. If we talked about that in the first session, if you didn't spend time on it, it's worth spending time on. You're going to see lots and lots and lots of hash tables. Syntax a little bit, you know, you got to get used to it, but they're awesome. They're everywhere.
And so let me give you an example of how we're going to start to control the information that we see. Take a look at my script, and this is the main code end where we're starting to put this in. So for each, and I'm going to leave this right now as computer so I don't have to change everything, but you get the idea.
You know, they pointed out in the Q&A, why don't you show them Control-H?
Control-H, Control-H, Control-H. All you guys know all these keyboard shortcuts.
So select $ computer.
Select $ computer.
And hit Control-H.
Control-H.
Search and replace, my friend.
Oh!
$
Search
C.
and replace.
$ C. And you probably don't want to do,
Oh, see what it's doing? Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, see, now that you don't want that one, so you want to skip that one.
Well, wait a minute. It didn't change this one.
Just keep going.
Just keep going?
You did find next, I think.
Oh, I probably replace. Did. So I just want to match whole word.
Whole
right?
word, sure. Maybe.
And then, so that one, skip that one. Yeah. So replace. Start over at the beginning. Oh, I'll just hand do it. Here, we'll just change it.
What the heck? What did you do? And there's a dollar. Oh, I screwed
up. Oh, now I have to do it down here, too. Yeah, so we'll just do this.
How,
make it nice and clean.
How did you do that?
How did I do what?
Nothing.
Oh, okay. So, so notice what I've done here is I've taken these commands and I've put them to a variable. So what we're going to do is we're going to store that object or multiple objects. We're going to store them to a variable and then use the dot notation to reference the properties or the methods that we want. Like we showed you this morning that you can do with variables. So look at what I'm doing down here. First of all, I'll talk about the syntax in just a second, but this is a hash table. I'm going to use those variables and then just grab the property information that I want from it. Now, if you're saying, how do I know what properties are available? Well, you take that var and you pipe it to get member, and you'll get the list of all the properties. So I'm just going to grab from the OS one, Win32 operating system, I'm going to grab caption and build number. And then for disk space, I want the free space, but I don't want that really long, ugly number. So I actually did the same calculation that I had done earlier. And we also had done in the last show of a custom column where I'm dividing it by 1 gigabyte and storing it as an integer so that it gets rounded up and it's a nice, easy to work with number. Now, here's the thing about the syntax is this is a hash table, right? So I got @ open squiggly and a close squiggly. And I've broken this out. Do you like the way this is broken out here? I've broken this out so that instead of putting it all on one line, making it nice and
yeah.
pretty.
I did that way.
Doing it this way means it's easy for you to add additional things. Notice that I have the name that I want to call the column, and then what I want that filled with, followed by a semicolon. Now, you could just keep typing like this and putting more and more in, but it makes it nicer if you line break it so that you can read it easier and add in additional things. The tricky part is to make sure that when you get to the last one, you don't put a semicolon. That's the closing squiggly that goes there.
You know, you don't need the semicolon here.
Oh, you don't?
No. You need the semicolon if you're putting multiple properties on the same line.
So
we need to know.
I can take this out?
Yeah.
I thought it yelled at me when I did that.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong.
Let's see. No, well, it's not showing up as a problem.
Yeah.
So let's see seems to be.
Yeah, so the semicolon is a statement terminator, and you need that if you're going to have multiple statements on the same line. In PowerShell, the carriage return is also a statement terminator. So.
And awesome. He's right. It worked just fine. So.
Thank you, Bruce Payette.
We really
did struggle between this. How do we have an interactive syntax and a programmatic syntax together? Cannot tell you how many long, long hours we spent trying to get this right. So,
well, I think it also it brings up what you also keep saying is that, you know, PowerShell. You guys are going to see this on the internet with semicolons and obviously
yes.
without semicolons. And so, PowerShell gives you multiple ways to do things, which is great. And this AI makes it even easier to read and deal with because hunting down semicolons is not fun.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
So take a look at, I've stored this as into a variable here because we're going to use this later. I want you to see what this is going to do. So what I've done is I just write output $prop. I just want it displayed on the screen so you can see what the data looks like. Notice I've got computer name, OS name, OS build, free space.
By the way, in the chat room, people are freaking out because at the top you used a $ capital C, and then you used $ lowercase c everywhere else. Is that going to work?
That's going to work just fine. But you know what? I should be consistent, shouldn't I?
Well, no, because it allows us to make a point. The point is that in PowerShell, we're case insensitive. Yeah, it's case insensitive. So you know, again. PowerShell is a great language because I'm a deeply flawed human. There's no way I'm going to remember, was that uppercase, lowercase? Doesn't matter. We're case insensitive. Wherever we can be, we are case insensitive.
And We talked about this during the first jumpstart. Case insensitive, a lot of guys that come from Unix, that's the first thing that they you know, is this going to matter? No, it doesn't. And some people get kind of upset by that. But as a Windows admin, if this had been made case sensitive, I'd done it once and gone, I have no idea, right? Yeah. And it would have killed me. So, yeah, this is a great point, is that for consistency's sake, I always like to try to be consistent, so I just changed it to a lowercase c, but it's a great point that case does not matter. So look at the order that I have these, and I'm going to run this. So get comp info and computer name DC, and we're just going to dump the output out to the screen. Now this is starting to look a little bit better. A little bit better. For the output that I want, notice that it's free. Well, wait a minute. It's free space computer name OS. It's, wait a minute. I did computer name OS name OS build, and now it's doing. The output is much nicer, but it's not doing it in the order that I want, Jeffrey. It's not doing it in the order that I want.
Yeah. So here's the deal about hash tables. Hash tables are guaranteed to give you unpredictable ordering. Yeah, it's just
swear
like,
to God, that's the whole point. Yeah.
Yeah. No. You know, we could give you a long blah 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 explanation. That rule's a better rule. In general, ordering's going to be pretty random in that. That's why in PowerShell version 3, we have a couple extra keywords like
ordered.
As a matter of fact,
I'm going to show you ordered, and I just want to point out.
Now, just to be clear, ordered is a little more expensive because we order things, and .NET didn't do that, so it's a little more expensive, but it's not that terribly expensive, and it's quite useful because then it is predictable.
And I just want to point out that in most cases, you really don't care about the order that your stuff's being displayed, because remember, if you were giving this as a tool to someone else, the idea is that admin could then pipe to select and get the information that they wanted, and that order then would occur for them.
Yeah.
But in PowerShell V3, we have this. And let's see if I can do this without screwing it up. Ordered. Okay, I've screwed it up. It's...
order? I don't know.
Ordered? Or is it order? Somebody's going to have to yell at me. I think maybe I have it over here. Did I put it in here?
No.
Yep, it's ordered.
Where?
With or without ordered. So let me go back to here. I am typing something horribly in... wrong, incorrect.
Get dollar sign.
Dollar sign.
So what's the error say?
Let's see here. The ordered attribute in hash in literal node. What does that mean?
On a literal, so show it again. The ordered attribute can be specified only on a hash literal node. Oh, okay. So here's what you do. Anytime you get something like that, I'll give you Bruce Payette's home phone number. And I want you to call him any time of the night to ask him about any bad error messages. So you'll get that home. No, put it on the other side. So you don't put it on the property.
Oh. I was thinking it may have been me and my little semicolon thingies that I was doing before.
No.
Put it on the other side.
So yes, it is not a type. Yes, so that's it.
Thank you.
But again, Bruce Payette, it's 425. I'll get that. I forget it.
So it's dollar sign. Boy, you can tell my brain's working
equals,
slow.
And then paste it
and then
after
there's
the
there's where it goes. Yeah, there.
The literal
there.
Hash.
Now, here's also a good note. In the help file on hash tables, this example is in there, and they show you the correct place to put it. So in my case right now, in real life, me not knowing where it goes or forgetting where it goes, I'd have gone into help and looked it up. So this is a good deal. But I would much rather have Bruce Payette's home phone number. He wouldn't like me very much, though.
You'll be just one of the many.
One of the many. That's awesome. So now watch, guys, when I run this, I've told it that I want it to be ordered. So these guys over here are working hard to order it for me. So I'm going to run it, and we'll take a look at it here. Get comp info. Username DC. And voila. Now it's in the order that I specified. Nice. Now, here's the thing. I want my own object.
Yes.
I'm asking a lot here. I'm running a couple lines, I'm grabbing some data, and I want to take an object that I can then send down the pipeline that people can use select and where and...
Yeah, it's worth noting. Show them the output there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Here's the output.
Okay, so notice you get this object, but you're not getting a table.
You're not getting,
this,
table.
Well, you're getting a table, but you're getting a table of name value pairs. Well, that's what a hash table is.
Yeah.
Now, for a lot of reasons, you can treat a hash table like an object. We call it a hash table object adapter, if you want to know the details. And so it works just fine. But a lot of times, like if it was a proper object, this would be showing you a proper table with each one of those names as columns, et cetera. So here's where it really shows up. If you had two of those things, you'd get a table with eight lines. And you couldn't tell where one object ended and the others. Whereas if it was a proper object, you'd have two lines, two rows, one for each object, where the properties were the columns.
And that's what we want to do.
That's
we don't
want
this, because right now, if you look at my screen, I piped this to get member. Now, we set it for ordered, so it's ordered dictionary. This is not the objects that we're used to working with in PowerShell. This is not what I want. I still want the true object that I can send down the pipeline and work with. So let's make our own object. And to let you guys know, this is in the sample number 6, but I'm just going to hand type it in here into this example. While I'm here, I think I am. Yeah, I told you guys I wasn't gonna do all this hand typing and I'm doing it. So $obj is kind of what I use, equals, and we have this commandlet called new object. And I'd like to put in the type of object. And this is the interesting thing, is you guys gave us this, we can make an object, a PS object.
Yeah.
So a PowerShell object. Guys, I'm creating an object. It's empty right now, but it's an object. It's supposed to have, methods and properties, but I can now assign that to it. So one way to do that is, wrong one. I'm going to assign it properties, and the properties that I'm going to assign it is that hash table of $prop. Now, I want you to notice something. This is a very important. We do new object, type name PS object, and I'm assigning the properties to it, and notice write output. I'm going to send it back out to the screen, out to the pipeline, that kind of thing. So let me run this and take a look at the difference. Get comp info. First of all, just look at the results. DC client. Ooh. Whoops, I didn't do something right. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you guys see where I made my mistake? I want to write that object out, not this. So let's run it again. Get comp info, DC client.
Ooh.
Now that's looking like the output that it should be looking like. I've got my column names, which are actual properties. And for each computer now, I'm getting a row in there.
Yep.
I'm getting objects. As a matter of fact, let's go ahead and pipe it to get member. And look, there's my properties, and it's on this custom PS custom object. Later on, we'll show you how you can even, and your why you would want to, create your own name for this object. But for right now, we're going to keep it pretty simple at making objects. Wow. You know what?
I don't.
I think, this is like the bulk of, if you do this, now you've got objects, you can do select, you can do where. You've actually kind of really made a tool at this point.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So at this point, guys, you might be saying, oh.
Wait. So here's the thing. Because you've outputted as an object, now all of a sudden you have a proper tool, but then it also can fit into the tool chain of other things. This is, if you recall, we talked about the last time we had the session, we talked about how you always want to write things to output versus the host.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The reason why is because here...
Because God kills puppies if you use write host.
Yes, he's that way.
Yes.
And this is now part of the tool chain. It does a distinct task in and of itself, but it does it in a way that then can combine with the other tools to form higher and higher levels of abstraction.
And as a great example with that is... I'm going to do the get info, and this time let's just do select, And the property that I want to select is, I want property computer name. So you see, I've now made a useful tool that other admins can use. So I can select out just the computer name. I can do things like, if you remember from the last session, I can now, since it's a real object, I can convert it to CSV,
JSON,
HTML.
Do JSON?
Yeah. Hey,
it's cool.
You wrote my name into the, hey, this is awesome, dude. Yeah. I love you. This is, convert it to JSON. Do you want to talk a minute real quick about JSON? Because that's becoming real popular.
Well, JSON, it's a new format. It's an object format, JavaScript object notation. And it's very, very popular. And there's a bunch of tools that can consume JSON and output JSON. So now PowerShell can take any object, WMI, ADO, Active Directory, XML, whatever you want, and convert it to JSON, or take JSON and import it to make it a PowerShell object. It's a beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful
thing. Well, it's our role as a glue language. Like, whatever your problem is, our job's to help you get it solved.
Is to help
and
you
so
get it
some
solved.
Guy, and that's the problem. The world always has been, the world is, and the world always will be a messy place, right? Yeah. It's a messy place in the past because everybody was doing random stuff. So right now we're trying to consolidate things and get everybody to do things one way. But then there's a whole bunch of people innovating and doing brand new things. So it's always going to be messy. And that's why PowerShell isn't too, you know, dogmatic around this is the way you will do it. No, that's nonsense. Our job is to make you successful. And that means helping you deal with the messy world. That's why we do XML. That's why we do all right. these things that other people might say are strange. Like, just have a point of view and make it so. Well, we do that. We do have a point of view, and we optimize for certain cases. But the reality is, if you have to go parse some HTML file, because that's the only way you can do it,
right.
Well, the other option is to fail. So, of course, you're going to do that.
Exactly. And so the beauty of what's happened right now is that we've managed to take some functional code and make our own object that can now be used with anything else that we want to use with down the pipeline, whatever formats that we want, if XML, CSV, all of that. Yeah. This is the important piece to making the tool. And this format, by following this, all we're going to do at this point this afternoon is add on to it. In other words, add additional parameter validation, add some error handling to it, add some cool tricks and features, add some help to this. But this is kind of the base of the format of being a toolmaker. And notice that how simple this was. We just created some simple parameters. We used commandlet binding. We made it as a function. And then we put our code in the process block. This guy right here for the properties, that's really important. And we created our own object. That's really important. Those pieces right there get you started down a road of making your own tools that solve your problems for you. Because remember, the whole point to PowerShell is they can't imagine every problem that you would have, so you now have the ability to solve it yourself. For the IT pro, this is wickedly cool because I don't have to be a C# developer to be able to make my own commandlet. So at this point, Jeffrey, you know, this is the core, but now it's kind of time that we start adding enhancements. Like, I know one of your fun things is parameter validation. So guys, let me catch you up where we are in the slides. So we're finishing off module 4 here. So just so that everybody's aware, and you have all this code. So we showed you where to add your code and then writing objects out to the pipeline. Guys, tell you what, we're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we're going to move on and add more and more to our tools.
Hey.
See you in 10.